Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the numeral 4-KIDS.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
Khalil Mack, he's fast, he's ferocious. When Mack is coming from the backside, then he's a guy who can make a game-changing, game-altering sort of tackle. Where if an Anthony Herron is chasing from the backside, all right, you may get tripped up on your ankles, but you're not necessarily as worried about some sort of a strip or takeaway happening.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
I think Matt Nagy knows he needs to win some damn games.
Big Ant Herron with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score.
When 11 o'clock rolls around on a Thursday, we start to get serious about the Bears game that weekend. And that's what we do now with Big Ant Herron. That's where you find him on Twitter. You find him not only on the Score Hotline brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, but you find him on Twitch as well. That is twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Before we get to Bears and Packers, Anthony, we certainly trust, despite the Iowa shirt that you're rocking at the moment.
The shimmy.
That's just great. What's going on between the aftermath of the Iowa victory over Penn State and James Franklin complaining that Iowa fans were booing injuries to Penn State players, and he says you don't do that. And the Iowa fans apparently were thinking, whoa, these are not real injuries. We're booing the tactics that you're trying here, the skullduggery of trying to slow us down. James Franklin says, I don't have to slow them down. They don't run a hurry up. It's not a tempo offense. So obviously these are real injuries, and you guys are violating protocol. So what do you make of it? Who's right? Who's wrong?
I mean, he's right. They don't run a hurry up. That's established.
They don't. No. They do not at all. And frankly, the Iowa offense has just been ordinary, and it's been ordinary at best. Their defense has been so remarkably spectacular at taking the ball away, and their special teams have been phenomenal as well. And so Iowa's scoring drives are normally not very long when they've had to score on offense, when it has been their defense putting the ball in the end zone. So that is 100% accurate. What's been odd sort of in the aftermath of the game is that this is fairly out of character on both sides of the equation, really, because like James Franklin week in and week out is like 1-0 guy. Like we got to go 1-0 in the Indiana week. We got to go 1-0 in the Iowa week. And then he sort of moves on to the next opponent. Penn State finds themselves on a bye week this week. And so he's not as quick and as apt to immediately move on to the next because there's been a storyline that's continued. But from Kirk Ferentz's perspective, he's not normally a coach who kind of comes here, especially like this wasn't directly after the game where Kirk Ferentz had a few public comments about this. This was in his media availability a couple of days removed from Saturday's ginormous win at Kinnick, you know, top five class. They take down Penn State, knock out the starting quarterback, just, you know, it's the fifth out of six quarterbacks who haven't been able to finish a game this season against Iowa. So that's not necessarily anything new where a starter doesn't make it all the way through the game for the Hawkeyes. Not all of those have been via injury. Some of it is just via awful performance against an outstanding defense. But a couple of days after the game is over, when Kirk Ferentz is addressing the Iowa media and they pose the question to him about the fans at Kinnick and the booing and the injuries, and, you know, he basically said, you know what? There's maybe one other time in my coaching career, in the 23 seasons he's been in Iowa City, he said there's only been one other time where it has been perhaps suspicious of what the opponent's been doing. So the fact that Kirk Ferentz didn't ignore it, didn't move on from the question, that he kind of gave voice to it, is very sort of out of character. But then also the fact that James Franklin basically brought a script to the podium and went into detail sort of defending his team and their tactics. It's really odd for him to do that also. But if nothing else, because when Penn State and Iowa meet up, it's been for about a decade now. Some really, really good games. And there's still a chance that they could meet in the Big Ten championship game. So this just kind of ramps up a rivalry that's been building.
Oh, I am pretty hyped for that matchup, frankly. I think it's going to happen again. And also, let's just shout out the conference. Putting five teams into the AP top 10 for the first time ever in a week, that is not nothing.
I mean, it has been such a great start to the season for Big Ten football. And, I mean, that stat you referenced later, but to be halfway through the year and have something that historic going on where, you know, and a couple of those are one-loss teams like Ohio State and Penn State, but because the non-conference slate has been great and because this is really the first time the Big Ten has played so many conference matchups fairly early in their season, so you've gotten to see some of the better teams meet up with each other. We're seeing some teams on the rise, like Michigan State, that feel like maybe they came out of nowhere, and we're seeing some of the blue bloods, like Ohio State, who are there as well. And so Iowa right now, their path through the rest of their schedule in the West Division, they don't have any ranked opponents remaining because Wisconsin's been down this year. Minnesota's been very banged up. But overall, because their offense isn't so explosive, I still think Iowa's going to play a number of close games here. Just to, I suppose the solace that Iowa fans can take is that their team tends to thrive in many of those close games. And in the other division, in the East, I have no idea what's going to happen there, man, because those teams over there have been balling.
I heard a stat from Brad Biggs earlier on the Score today when he was on with Mully and Haw in the 7 o'clock hour. He said the Chicago Bears blitz less often than almost anybody, that they are near the bottom of the league in blitz percentage and sending that extra guy. I then look at who is leading the NFL in sacks per game. That's your Chicago Bears.
That's right.
At 3.6. Those two stats together are really intriguing, especially going up against Aaron Rodgers, because you don't want to blitz him. I know people love the blitz and it makes people feel all excited to send extra guys, but it's an inherently weak defense that is almost always cut to ribbons by a guy with the instincts, the arm, and the eyes of Aaron Rodgers. This, dare I say, bodes well.
Sure. Yes.
Feel free to say I'm full of crap. I mean, you don't have to dance around it.
That's the thing, man.
I know it is, but if you can rush four, and fallback team, everybody else, those other seven dropping back with their eyes on him. I like to put it this way. Better this than the alternative, right?
Agreed.
Okay?
Very much agreed. All right. Very much agreed.
And lowered the expectation.
Well, he made me feel bad.
I mean, no. The thing
I'm
is
really
that
confident about this. No, it's better than it was.
He's optimism shaming.
I know, but the thing is, because it's Aaron Rodgers and because it's Devontae Adams, this is a scenario where you go into it, to me, with a little bit of tepid optimism, and because the Bears are taking what I suppose I'll term as kind of a renewed approach, where on Bears Post Game Live over on 32 after the game ended, the first time I went with the word, we do a word of the day at the end of the show, and I used the word identity because I feel like it was the first time that Matt Nagy, that Ryan Pace, that everyone on the roster, everybody at Hallis Hall understands what the identity of this offense, what the identity of this team needs to be to give them the best opportunity to win with the current personnel they have. Now, that being said, this identity, this current approach on offense, the heavy sets, and now with multiple tight ends banged up, Alex Barr's getting double-digit snaps in a game, that's got to continue. Frankly, even after the tight ends get back, man, keep rolling them out there. I mean, who wants to see 320 on the edge coming at you if you're an edge defender? So I think that's great. But it's not necessarily going to lend itself to a shootout with Aaron Rodgers. It's going to lend itself to ball control, to long, methodical drives, to drives that sometimes end up in a punt for field position, to sometimes end up in perhaps a long field goal attempt from Cairo Santos, who's been the hottest kicker in football for a couple of years at this point. And that's okay. If that's your formula that gives you the best opportunity for success, that's what it's got to be. But that being said, it means your defense has to continue to be stellar, and it's difficult. Even when Aaron Rodgers starts slow, he tends to find a way, and he has found a way so many times against these Bears over the years. So, yes, I love where all the complementary football aspects came together to lead to that win. The commitment they had to complementary football to lead to that win last week against the Raiders, I believe that's their best opportunity for success. But I got to see it for a couple more weeks here for it to all come together for me to think that this is truly where they're at. But I like where it's headed.
Agreed. It's a wait-and-see kind of approach, given what happened with the Raiders last week. But I found myself saying the same thing, Ant. I was like, man, they're just set up to run the ball well. Like, they just, that's what they do. And it's so the opposite of what Matt Nagy, I think, visualized for this team, and really says more about what Ryan Pace sees in players, too, and why he drafts who he drafts, which I think is a different discussion altogether. The idea of those two not being from the get-go consistent. Yeah. But either way, at least we're seeing this come together to a point where it's hard to say, nah, we're still going to mix this in. No, you just have to understand this is slapping you in the face. This is who this team is.
It's all positive signs, right? It's positive signs, but because this is a regime that's been in place, like been together for nearly a handful of years at this point, Ryan Pace going back multiple years prior to that. So there is, you know, like I've been talking about, like the Trubisky shrapnel that was there for them and their caution with advancing Justin Fields. And I think for us as Bears voyeurs, there's some shrapnel there as well. Just taking a little bit of a wait and see approach to how much we believe they will commit to this approach. And frankly, I think, you know, I'm one of the ones who was sort of earlier to this party of control the rock and get tight ends on the field and all that, going back a couple of seasons. But I do think that the city at large and then the Bears viewers and Bears analysts and everything else, I think everyone is of the same accord that this is what they need to do. Does it put you in a position to dominate? Does it put you in a position to win a Super Bowl? Not tomorrow, but it gives you something to grow off of. It gives you your best opportunity week in and week out. And it does allow. Like I was just talking about how Iowa's defense is basically winning games for them as their offense is kind of growing steadily. This Bears offense can grow steadily. I mean, if nothing else, we have a number of examples of where Justin Fields, when he has pass protection, when he has rhythm, when he can see things clearly, he is extremely accurate with the deep ball. We have seen Green Bay give up deep balls throughout the season. And if nothing else, once they go some max protection against a very good Green Bay pass rush that will have advantages in matchups coming off the edge if the Bears allow themselves in predictable downs and distances, if you go some max pro, if you got Mooney streaking through the secondary, we know Fields can make those throws, can make that happen. So there's potential here for certainly some big plays against Green Bay. You just don't want it to end up where you're, you know, shootout Fields versus Rodgers. I don't necessarily like that matchup, but this Bears defense and what they can try to do in getting after Green Bay's offense, where they're not outstanding on third down. They get into a lot of third and longs. They go some five-man protection on third and longs, trusting Aaron Rodgers to either extend the play or just get the ball out of his hand so quickly, or Devontae Adams to win quick at the line of scrimmage. So that Adams versus Jalen Johnson matchup that we'll see pretty frequently should be fun to check out too. So some of those things, some of the dominoes that could fall that could lead to either success or failure, depending on how one position group wins or does not win their matchup, will be something really critical to watch.
Well, unfortunately, Dan and Ant, in my basic research this week, I did come across the fact that, like, in my predictions, I'm like, I don't know that I'm spotting the Bears over 20. And then I'm like, wait a second, how bad is their scoring offense relative to the rest of the league? They're 30th, which is concerning.
Yeah, only 32 teams in the league. So you'd like to be higher. You'd like to be higher.
That is a goal.
That's some analysis.
We need you to score some more points.
That's
more.
The good stuff there.
Like more we would prefer that.
Higher.
Yeah.
I want to go higher.
What encourages me is because we talked about Damian Williams a couple of weeks ago when David Montgomery was still healthy and running well, but the offense was still trying to figure out what they did or didn't want to do. And we talked about Damian Williams, and I was saying like, he's not necessarily running with what appears to be real vigor, real urgency yet. And then we saw the game again. Well, really, the game 2 weeks ago against Detroit, where early in the game he just sort of was like kind of cruising out of bounds on a decent little screen pass, and he just kind of made his way, just you know, under his own accord, where he could have lowered his shoulder and tried to get maybe inside the five and towards the end zone. It's like, I don't feel like taking a hit, and he just kind of cruised out of bounds. But then David Montgomery gets hurt later that game, and we see him finishing runs, dropping his pads, making some really nice moves in the hole, really trying to turn the corner, stiff arm some guys. His urgency, his effort, the nature of wanting to finish runs is really enhanced since David Montgomery went down. And we're seeing shades of that guy who, you know, everyone's reminding us could have been the Super Bowl MVP a couple of years back. He looks more like that guy now. So that should be very encouraging. If the Bears can continue to, especially with the interior of that offensive line, like Sam Mustafa had a nice game. James Daniels and Cody Whitehair had a phenomenal game last week. Both of them just finishing blocks, Daniels downfield, taking out linebackers, DBs, you name it. If they can have that type of performance and have that type of commitment to the run game, whether it's Williams, love what I saw from Khalil Herbert, if you get that, It sets up some of those potential chunk play opportunities off of play action. Getting Justin Fields under center, hard play action. Yeah, turn the back to the defense, two receiver route, and take your chances because you got guys who can make plays. And even if they don't make the grab, you pick up penalties. When Devontae Adams isn't catching the ball for Aaron Rodgers, he's drawing flags on somebody else because A-Rod is willing to take those shots to him. So when you run the ball like that, everything else on the deep ball, on the chunk play, opens up at such a higher capacity. And frankly, we haven't even seen the legs of Justin Fields unleashed yet, which I'm okay with as you sort of piecemeal what this offense can be with him. There's going to be that game. There's going to be those few runs where we see it, where it's not reverse pivot, keep my eyes down the field, and then I take some awkward hit from a defender. We're going to see a couple of those moments coming up here where it's going to be, all right, I'm outside the pocket. Now let me turn on my 4-3-4-4 and pick up 30 or 40 yards. It's just not necessarily a quick part of what he, like his makeup as a QB. He doesn't look for those things like I've talked to you guys about, but it's there. So there's a lot of meat on the bone that's still here for this Bears offense.
Got some pass rushing, little X's and O's stuff, positioning stuff. I know you get excited about that, so we will excite you when we come back. We're talking football with Anthony Heron on The Score.
I want to go higher!
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
We're talking football with Anthony Heron. Make sure you check him out on Twitch. He's very proud of his Iowa Hawkeyes right now. But before we get back to football, my partner has some breaking and unfortunate news.
I have some really sad breaking news. Thank you to our listeners, as usual, who alerted us to the update from the zoo in Minnesota. Unfortunately, Gladys was found injured on the road, and a neighbor took her to the zoo, and she had already passed away.
Gladys, the Eurasian owl, is dead.
I'm very sad about this. Dan was just excited to issue the line.
I'm sad about it. Like, at least the Stellar Sea Eagle was recovered healthy, and they said it was a difficult day for their animal care team. They had hand-raised Gladys from a chick, and they worked with her daily, and now Gladys has ceased to be.
She just wanted some freedom.
A late owl. She is pining for the fields. Sorry, Anthony. So
I'm sorry, Ant.
apparently he'll get over it. Now, the resurgence.
So there's a story about this owl who flew off and
And we thought everything would be fine, and everything's not fine.
Why would you think everything would be fine when an animal escapes from the zoo? Because how frequently does that end well?
Well, it did with Cody. Why do you
have to bring facts into this conversation?
It happened in Pittsburgh last week, the Steller sea eagle that escaped. It hung around, and it was fine, and they had all these special contraptions, and now he's back, and he's healthy and uninjured, and it's all good.
Okay,
And Gladys gets hit by a semi-trailer. I mean, I guess...
Yeah, he's fine after they bring him back, and they punish him, and
bad eagle!
Some pain upon it, yes. After they punished the eagle for escaping brief. And you said a sea eagle?
Steller's sea eagle. It's a Russian and Japanese Arctic. It's a massive, massive bird. And
sounds like a mythic creature.
It looks
sure
like
it
one.
Existed.
It looks
it CGI.
Like
CGI. I don't think that actually happened.
Trust
CGI
me. Next up, it's going to be a Philippine harpy eagle if we're going down these sort of exotic giant raptors here. But that's not why you called. Khalil Mack, the resurgent Khalil Mack.
Steller Sea Eagle Khalil Mack.
A-G-A-L-E-S.
I love what Mack is doing with his brute strength again. It's not all about moves or spins or the whole Robert Quinn lean. He's mauling people and getting a lot off that bull rush. I know he again has nagging injuries, but it looks like he's got his athletic base enough that he's trusting his strength again.
And it's a combination of things there, because like on the 2-point conversion, it was like just a hellacious get off and straight speed around the corner. But yes, he is mixing in that power and he's doing it with such ferocity. And the thing is, I love the amount of games that the Bears are running up front. They're frequently utilizing twist stunts, so it's not, and you know, they didn't do enough of it in week one, frankly, against the Rams. We've seen more and more of it throughout the rest of the season since then, where it's not just, especially when you're not bringing the blitz frequently, then you allow just that changeup, that off-speed pitch to have your defensive front show a different look, allow a different rush angle, allow them, as Khalil Mack did on the actual sack that was recorded in addition to the, you know, separate from the 2-point conversion, he doesn't get a sack credit for, but the one where he actually recorded a sack was on an ET stunt where the end crashes down inside as the penetrator, and he didn't necessarily try to penetrate the gap because there's a variety of ways, especially once you're experienced and you're running a lot of twist stunts up front, that particular time where he got the sack on Derek Carr, as opposed to targeting the inside shoulder of the offensive tackle trying to get up the field, which he has done frequently when he and Robert Quinn have been lined up next to each other, and then Khalil Mack is the penetrator from the tackle position, and he just works up the field targeting the crease. When he came from the edge and became the penetrator, he actually targeted from the outside. He didn't target the inside shoulder of the tackle. He targeted the outside shoulder of the right offensive guard and just knocked him clear across the formation. And so essentially he became a blocker washing the pile, almost like an offensive lineman would do, where you're trying to take multiple bodies with you, thus throwing off the throwing window of the quarterback. His vision is cloudy. And because so many of the bodies are now moving laterally on the offense, it can open up additional rush lanes. Really, the main sort of cog in there that he's trying to open up is the ability for that tackle to very tightly loop around him. And that's where the tight loop of the tackle is really key, because since Mack didn't immediately penetrate, what he immediately did was wash the pile. Now Khalil Mack has opened up his own crease, and now it's a very tight loop, and that offensive tackle is on an island against the looper. So as opposed to immediately trying to penetrate, he knocks the offensive guard to kingdom come, and then Khalil Mack ends up becoming the penetrator from there, because it takes a different level of athleticism to have that power into the guard, but not get stuck, not cling to him for a moment. You see there's a lane there where you can still go sack the quarterback. So you violently get off of that block, and now you become essentially a secondary penetrator when it's not necessarily set up for him to be the one to make the play.
Yeah, that's really, I think, what's so fun to watch is just the when the defense is so good that you can see how opportunities are being created.
Yeah.
And then you see the initial action that sets up the secondary action, and then you're seeing what happens either resulting in turnovers, pass breakups, or just getting to the quarterback. The thing that concerns me, though, is the making of plays in space. When you've got a guy like Aaron Jones who averaged over 7 yards a carry last week, that concerns me when it comes to that piece of the defense against Green Bay.
And I wonder how much of that approach will be there, because you know the Bears have been effective against the run this season. They have game in and game out. The film itself doesn't necessarily tell the tale that they are just a stalwart front seven that doesn't give you an inch. But because they've rushed the quarterback so effectively, they've gotten their opponents behind the chains, and you haven't necessarily seen a commitment to trying to run the football against the Bears that frequently in these games. We saw the Cleveland Browns example of that's the opponent that just stayed committed to the run, and they stayed effective with the run because of their commitment to it and because just how much their defense overwhelmed the Bears offense. So the entire, you know, squad basically can just kind of play downhill at Chicago. I'll be curious whether or not Green Bay, because, like, you know, it's either going to be Jones or Dillon. Kind of one of them tends to get off in a game. Last week, Jones had like kind of one big chunk run against the Bengals, but Aaron Rodgers does a really effective job, and as Matt LaFleur calls the plays, they utilize them in a variety of ways. They've sort of turned A.J. Dillon into a decent pass receiver out of the backfield also. So whether it is screen passes or little bubble screens they'll throw them, or swing passes, or sometimes they'll just motion out and empty the backfield set and allow actual routes to be run by Jones, I do think that matchup with the running back on the Bears, linebackers, and especially like you're talking about, Layla, trying to tackle them in space will be key, because frankly, Green Bay does some of the things Chicago and Matt Nagy would have liked to do. They'll go five-man protection. They'll spread you out. But like I was talking about earlier, they will trust Aaron Rodgers. They will trust their pass protection, even what's now a banged-up offensive line. They'll trust them to try and do some things in pass pro that allow these empty sets while still working from like a lot of 11 personnel where you got a back and a tight end on the field. And then they'll just say, surprise, ha ha. And then they'll go spread out and still try to do some things where they like carve you up, throwing the football. So they do that at a really high level, at an effective level, because of who they have personnel wise, chief amongst them, the quarterback and one of the best receivers in football. Bears aren't nearly as effective at that. So when you watch Green Bay's offense, you'll think, oh, this is all the stuff we didn't want Matt Nagy to do. Well, it's because the Bears aren't very good at it. Green Bay is very good at it. And Rodgers, with his pre-snap adjustments, finds that matchup, whether it is the tight end, whether it is the running back, pretty frequently, more frequently than anything, it is Devontae Adams, and finds ways to make little adjustments, whether it is a little more motion that they do now than they used to, but if nothing else, just to trade the formation even before the cadence begins, and then say, you know what, I like this matchup, wink, wink, nod, nod, you out there, it's coming to you. And sometimes it's just a quick, you know, sort of relief route that's there, because off coverage dictates that you're going to gain some quick yards after the catch. So he's just got, you know, sort of the keys to the car in a way right now with Green Bay's offense that he didn't initially when Matt LaFleur first came there.
Bears unveiled a wrinkle in using Alex Bars as an extra tight end. And I don't know if that was just a thing for a game or it's the start of something, because then you start wondering, do they get him close to the goal line, get him in motion and, you know, get him isolated and try to run something to him? You know, that classic West Coast, you know, put it in the belly of the fullback, pull it back, and you get him that Pete Metzelaars play where he's in the back of the end zone. Right. When you're on the field on defense and you see that 64 is in and eligible, what goes through your mind as far as your keys, what you're looking for, and what you know the possibilities are that you think, because at the limitations when he comes in the game?
Well, one thing we saw the Bears do, especially one time last week where Damon Williams made a nice cut against the grain, was that they actually ran Alex Bars in motion, like you referenced there, and they brought him in motion to the wide side of the field. And as they did that, they initially allowed the counter action where initially Williams was pressing the hole towards the right, knowing the entire time he was going to cut it back against the grain. But when you've got that big body, that additional tight end that's there, you know, repeatedly over and over again, Alex Bars, you know, reporting is eligible. And he gets up there, you're not worried about him catching a pass, of course, even though he's lining up as a wing and as a tight end, and they are starting to use him in motion. But it does force you as a defender within that front seven, you know, you got to hunker down that much more. Like if it's a tight end running up there on you, you're thinking, if you're a true defensive end, this is a matchup I should win.
Yeah, if it's Jimmy Graham, you're not worried at all, right? Yeah.
You shouldn't be, but yeah. Then, you know, we did see some moments there, even with Jimmy Graham. Now, we can, you know, revisit the Jimmy Graham thing in a moment, but you're thinking with most tight ends, this is a matchup I should dominate. even if you're an outside linebacker, I should really control the edge here against this individual. When it's Alex Bars, you got that size and that heft coming at you. Two different things. One, if he's just bringing real force at you, yes, it is just hard to knock back the point of attack. But even beyond that, just that presence on the edge, it can even be difficult just to find the running back. Because he's so massive, and it's a different type of presence you're accustomed to seeing out in space there, where if you're trying to set the edge and you drop your pad level down and you're sitting down against that block, you want to show a little color up the field to force the back to declare in the opposite direction. But some of these backs run in a manner where if it's an outside stretch play or so, sort of an outside zone play, you may not actually even see that back declare. So then it actually forces the pursuit to be just a little bit more delayed, a little bit slower when a back is very patient behind just another really big body that can be there trying to block the edge for him. So Alex Bars gives you that additional physical blocking presence. So, I mean, I'm the biggest J.P. Holtz fan there is in this city and have been for years. Can't wait until he's healthy and back on the field, because he's been the main consistent key to Bears' run success over the last few seasons when they've utilized him in those roles. But I like the wrinkle that Bill Lazor, that Matt Nagy have added here with Alex Bars in that. And so even as more tight ends get healthy, I do hope we continue to see Alex Bars back there.
I know you rained all over my optimism parade, but how do you see this one going? Any thoughts?
I mean, I'll believe it when I see it that the Bears will be able to overmatch Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. I think their approach, this renewed approach, will be tested in this game likely, because if Green Bay puts some early points on the board, will you stay stubborn with the rushing attack? Will you stay patient with your offensive approach? Because that has not been a strong suit of Matt Nagy as the Bears head coach / play caller. Now that he has again given up those duties to Bill Lazor, can that just sort of enhance his patience? If you see Green Bay moving the ball a bit, if you see that maybe my defense is back on its heels a bit, can you still take this complementary football approach? I mean, I love the fact that when Matt Nagy came to the podium after the game the other day, one of the first words out of his mouth was complimentary. That complimentary approach can be tested if Aaron Rodgers starts off hot and you're thinking, wow, how are we going to come up with a stop against this guy? It's already 10-0 at the end of the second quarter. Well, you know what? It's still a very tight game if that's the case. Regardless of how many yards they get, regardless of what they're gaining or what you're not gaining, if the game is close, continue to keep the bigger picture in mind. If I can see that approach, I think the Bears got a shot. If I don't, and that gets tested, we get, Matt Nagy getting a little kind of yippy with wanting to throw the ball all over the place and taking things over in the giant play sheet, then they're probably going to be in trouble.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right. See you folks.
Thanks, Ant.
The bottom of the hour has been brought to you by DuckDuckGo. When we come back, let's talk about an exciting game that we all watched the end of last night, because it deserves some attention. Next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Deegan Smith, the crossover, the attack, and the lay! What a breakdown from Skylar Deegan Smith! It's a two-possession game! Vandersloot to inbound, gets it to Dolson, will take. That's it! The 2021 WNBA Finals are even at a game apiece. Phoenix persists in overtime. 91-86, the final in game two.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That was some hard-fought basketball on ESPN2 last night. Caught most of the fourth quarter, and I loved how the coaches, you could actually hear them mic'd up as they were describing the plays they were calling. That was cool. And watching the two really good point guards, veteran point guards in Courtney Vandersloot and Skylar Deegan Smith, going at it and getting that ball screen and heading downhill. And for me, the old school basketball of the big person in Brittany Griner, that's the basketball I grew up with.
That Brittany Griner in the post, man.
A dominant center, and everything revolves around your dominant center and the cross screening and everything that you're doing elsewhere. It looked like that was old fashioned basketball to me. It was very, very familiar and satisfying.
Yeah, that was an overtime win for the Mercury in game two of the WNBA Finals, 91-86. The Sky whooped them in the first game. That was a handily won battle, 91-77. So game three comes back to Wintrust tomorrow night. It's already sold out. But it has been fun basketball to watch, to say the absolute least. It hasn't just been Courtney Vandersloot, of course.
Is it Kalea Copper?
Yeah, Kalia Copper.
Kalia Copper. She is a live wire.
Philly, man. That's some Philly basketball. We see her take it straight to the hole.
But, like, really athletic and quick twitch. The way she was defending inbound passes. I mean, really, that's a handful.
And then what made the difference for the Monarchs, it wasn't just Brittany Griner, who I think matched or passed a playoff high for her. It was Diana Taurasi.
She's 40 like, years old.
That's a name that you've definitely heard watching college basketball and then the WNBA. Scored 18 points in the second half.
Including a four-point play late on which she might have been her own teammate pushing somebody into her. I learned something, too, in that game. I did not know that when they go to replay in the WNBA, rather than just determining who touched it last, anything they see in the replay, they can retroactively adjudicate. You can't do that in the NBA. So there was a ball late that was last touched by Phoenix. It clearly was going to be Chicago ball, but they noticed that the ball was probably knocked away by what should have been a foul, and then they instead just called it a wash and said it stands and it's going to be Phoenix ball, which I found kind of odd. Like call the foul and then describe and I guess play stops there, but that just seemed weird that they were able to kind of say offsetting penalties, you know, replay second down on that one.
Yeah, and at least we also saw, I thought the broadcast did a good job with the illustration of explaining the differences both between the college game and the pro game for women's basketball, and then also what you just mentioned, differences between NBA, WNBA. And how fun was it to watch, and Chris Paul's notorious for this, he will watch games everywhere. He's a hoops junkie. Like when he was in Oklahoma City, he would go to Oklahoma games. And he and Devin Booker are in the front row, and Booker's got a real camera taking pictures. It was a really fun environment to watch. I am very excited to see what happens Friday night with that sold out arena. And then it's been cool to see guys like Allen Robinson wear the Chicago Sky jersey supporting them. We saw the White Sox do it too. And I just think it's a fun vibe when everybody gets involved. It's like those games where all the athletes would go to the game from your school and support either team. And I always think those are fun. It's like when Akeem Hicks was at the Bulls and Lakers game. Like, oh, you know, it's a good game when the football team is here.
Transition with Lawrence Holmes is next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.